And a very fine evening to everybody out there. This is Tom, and welcome to Tom Harris USA, episode number 81. And a cold and drizzly Chicago evening going on right outside. And it has been, for the last couple of days, a little bit wet. And that seems to have put the kibosh on the sort of spur-of-the-moment camping trip that Pete and I were thinking of. And I suppose that we're just going to have to wait till a little bit later in the season. I didn't realize that a lot of the state parks in Illinois and Wisconsin, sort of within driving distance of us, don't actually open their campgrounds up till the beginning of May. But since we actually have some nice, warm, and mostly sunny weather planned for the weekend here in Chicago, I thought it would be kind of a cool idea for us to go out and go outside and enjoy nature a little bit, because that's something that I've really missed. And we haven't actually been camping for a while. But it does kind of make sense that they don't open until May 1st. Probably because April is kind of a wet month, and it turns out that I think it would be kind of too damp to camp out right now. And the hiking trails up at the park that we were thinking about going to are reported as being rather muddy and wet at the moment. So I guess we're just going to have to wait. April is turning out to be a pretty busy month for me, and it seems like we have plans almost every weekend this month. And so finding time to actually get away for an entire weekend, and even like a three-day weekend, is going to be more difficult with the live show starting. But my point is, there's a lot going on here, and that's always exciting. So maybe what we do need is just kind of a weekend to relax and not do much, and I think that's kind of what we have going on this weekend. Next weekend, of course, is C2E2, the big comic convention here in Chicago. We already have our passes, and hopefully that'll be a good time. It's been a long time since we've been to a comic convention. It's been a few years, partly because we've been going to the anime convention in the spring, which we're not doing this year, but also because Wizard World, which has been the most active Comic-Con here on an annual basis, just hasn't been as good lately. And this C2E2 is shaping out to be a really awesome show. But I'm looking forward to it. There's a lot of famous people going to be there, a lot of people who we'd like to see, and including some of the Legion-related people who I'd like to meet. So that'll be fun. And then the weekend after that, April 24th, as I have been endlessly talking about on this show, is the premiere of the live show, which will be at 10 a.m. Central Time. It will be 11 a.m. Eastern Time, Saturday, April 24th. And if you're in the UK, the show is from 4 to 5 p.m. in the afternoon. And you can get there by going to unitedkingdomradio.co.uk. And you can Skype in, because it is a call-in show, and you'll be able to participate directly by Skyping into United Kingdom Radio. Now, if you're not already listening to United Kingdom Radio, I have to say it's a station that I actually listen to every single show. I highly recommend it. The shows are actually live shows, but they are also podcasts. Now, I can't always listen to people live, and I usually miss the first half of Chris Reardon's show, which he does on Monday mornings. And I often miss, because I'm at work at the time, and, you know, of course, if I'm working, I'm not listening to podcasts or live radio shows. But there's a lot to be said. And of course, United Kingdom Radio is still looking for new people. They're still looking for people to host new shows. So if you know anybody who is actually wanting to start a live podcast, and you know, has good ideas and has the right equipment and so forth, then you should put them in touch by going to unitedkingdomradio.co.uk, and you know, maybe they could get a start there. Maybe they could actually do a show from the UK on United Kingdom Radio. Now, it's interesting. I was talking with Lee Mills. Now, Lee Mills does a show on United Kingdom Radio as well, and he's also the webmaster for the station. And I guess nobody had gotten around to telling him that I was going to be doing a show on United Kingdom Radio, even though I think everybody else involved already knows that. Probably because Lee doesn't listen to this show, maybe, because I think I've been plugging it more on this show. But it's kind of interesting that, you know, they don't even tell the webmaster when a new host is coming. But anyway, that's neither here nor there. All right. So last time we talked about torture. Now, some would say that this show is torture, but that's not really what we were talking about. Very cheery, cheerful subject to talk about. And this was based kind of on a comment that I had from Scott Mitchell of the Scott podcast. And I have the part two of Scott's comment here. And I'm going to go ahead and play this for you in its entirety and then make a few comments. So take it away, Scott.
Now, another one that you might want to explore for me, are you an extreme ender on this one, is one that Trucker Tom, I know, feels very strongly about, which is abortion. In his mind, abortion is never right. It's murder, plain and simple. You're killing babies. And then babies are obviously innocent, so why would it ever be right to kill a baby? So I wonder what you think about that one. Now, if your excuse is that you would kill a baby for the mother's convenience and the mother's health, then you've probably gone middle ground a little bit on that issue. Because the underlying moral issue of killing somebody for the advantage of somebody else, well, that's like torturing somebody for the advantage of somebody else, too. They're really kind of linked, if you think about it, in the moral realm. If it's wrong to torture, no matter what gain might be gotten out of it at all, and I just gave an extreme case, then it ought to be wrong in all cases to have to do abortion as well. Here again, though, I find an exception even of that, because, okay, fine, we take the mother out of it as an excuse. And there's plenty of them. Like, there's rape, incest, mother's health. But, you know, there's one other one that I think is as much, maybe more important than all of them, where it may make sense. And this actually comes down to almost like a podcast I did, which was about mercy killing. You have, and this happens, you have cases where mothers have a perfectly healthy infant, and it'll go to a certain point, sometimes towards the end of the pregnancy, and then something horrific happens. Things go horribly wrong in the womb, and there is a disease attacking the baby. It is a baby. And sometimes this disease can be something akin to being mummified, you know, or calcified, or some other process that's extraordinarily painful and ultimately absolutely deadly. And the baby is writhing, literally writhing within the mother's womb in pain. And we'd not be in favor of putting it out of its misery. You know, I'm sorry, but I think in something like that, to prevent something like that coming about, I would be in favor of some kind of, you know, kind version of ending the pregnancy. Just, you know, as I would for a human that was in writhing in pain and there was no way out and they were going to die, I think that it's right to allow them the choice of saying, I just want to die. And they just, like when I have sodium pentothal, well, it used to be sodium pentothal, but, you know, these, when I'm in to have an operation, I just whoop, fade out of it. If that was the end of my life, that would be a great end. I'm having it. And I've said that before, you know, if I die on the operating table sometime, you know, that's a nice way to go. I went quick. It was a lot better than going suffering long term with cancer, thank you very much. Now, maybe not everybody feels that way, but, you know, I'd rather go quick and without having to suffer a lot of pain. So to me, that seems like the kind thing to do. We do that for animals. Why not for humans? So I find myself in a middle ground point of view on that, just simply to be kind. And then a lot of people will still say, no, that's murder. They must suffer to the very end. God dictates it. You know, what if you don't believe in God? Now who dictates it except you? I mean, yeah, it's, and you know what side of the God issue I'm on, you know, and it's not the atheist one, but still, I can see the other point of view. So, yeah, I do tend to end up being in the middle. I there's not too many things that I think you could come up with where I could just solidly stay on one side and say that it's always right in all cases, even in the Bible where God says, thou shalt not kill, and yet he himself messes all around with it in the Bible. You know, he kills himself. Firstborn of all the kids in Egypt, you know, Pharaoh's baby included, all the firstborn, I think it was sons, or maybe it was sons and daughters. I think it was the firstborn son. Ah, whatever. Anyway, he killed kids, innocent kids, just because. I mean, it's very unclear in the Bible when it says, thou shalt not kill, and then yet God himself does killing, and his people do it. You know, they come into the land of milk and honey and kill every, you know, man, woman, and child there to take it as their own. You know, I've talked about this in my podcast. So I find myself middle grounding on things that are commandments, you know. So, you know, how much more solid, at least in the mind of somebody who is a believer, can you get than a commandment? It's not a suggestion, but yet I find myself there. You know, I have to think logically about things. You have to take emotion out of things. You have to just, and if you do that, it's tough. It's tough to just take this one-sided point of view.
Okay, thank you, Scott, for your contribution. It's always good to hear from you, sir. Now, this is a completely different issue, I think, from what we were talking about. Now, last time we were talking about clear-cut moral issues. And one of those clear-cut moral issues that I gave as an example is the issue of torture. Now, there isn't a lot of ambiguity there as far as I'm concerned. Torture is a very clear-cut situation. And you bring up the issue of abortion and kind of proceed to talk about that a little bit. Now, the thing that I think that all three of the comments that you talk about have in common, and the first being torture, the second being abortion, the third being euthanasia. All three of these topics seem to elicit the same sort of general knee-jerk reaction. But I almost think that the similarity ends there. They aren't the same thing. I mean, they really, and to me, they're completely separate ethically and morally as well. And I think that you can find a lot more ambiguity in questions of life and death and questions of human suffering, of imposing human suffering on people. And I really see torture as being a more clear-cut issue, period. And I think that the very fact that you've been able to talk for, you know, 3 or 4 minutes on the ambiguities of abortion tells you something about that issue. It's not a clear-cut issue. In fact, it's a very difficult issue. It's a very complicated issue. And it's just one of those issues that people are just kind of intransigent about. They have a very firmly held belief about this is right, this is wrong, this is always wrong, and there's not a lot of convincing that you can do on the issue of abortion. This is what a lot of our political discourse in this country includes. I mean, I wouldn't say it's centered around abortion, but it certainly plays a big part, particularly with the social conservatives. Now, I talked about this in a previous program. I talked about the social change of the late 60s and the early 70s. And abortion was one of those hot-button issues that has kind of been around since 1972, 1973 in there. The issue of homosexuality falls into that category as well. It was also another topic that came into prominence sort of at that same time. Another was women's rights. Now, the difference between those other topics and abortion is that whereas gay rights and women's lib and so forth are essentially their human rights questions, abortion is regarded mainly as a privacy issue. At least this is how the law sees it. That the decision to whether or not to have abortion is up to a woman, and it's between a woman and her doctor. Now, I'm not pro-abortion. I'm certainly pro-contraception. And if you end up with, you know, with an unwanted pregnancy, I am pro-adoption. On almost every issue that matters, I am a pro-life person. I don't think people should go out and have abortions. I think abortion used as a form of birth control, and only for that reason. So in other words, using abortion instead of contraception, I think is a very, very bad idea. I don't think it's socially good. I don't think it's morally good. I think there's a lot of things about it I dislike. It's certainly not healthy for the mother. But one of the false arguments that gets made a lot about abortion is somehow this notion that, that a lot of people are pro-abortion, that they want abortions to happen. They want as many abortions to happen as possible. And I've actually heard people say that, that the liberals want as many abortions to happen as possible. Did that work? No. That's like the worst Rush Limbaugh impersonation ever. Sounded a bit more like Sean Connery. But I've actually heard people say that in the media. And it isn't true. It isn't true. There may be a few people way on the fringes who think that way. Now, I've never met one, or encountered them online in various discussion forums, but apparently some people believe that they're relatively common. But I see that thrown up mainly as a straw man and an argument that is based on this very strong emotional response that people have to the abortion issue. Now, when you start talking about the mother's health or the infant having a disease in the womb and you start talking about stuff like that, I mean, this isn't, I don't think, necessarily in the center of the issue. I think that, you know, that there are certainly going to be some people on the far end of the anti-abortion spectrum who are going to say that even if the mother's going to die, it's wrong to abort the baby, which I think is, you know, completely unreasonable position, to the point where these people are almost sociopathic or delusional. Thankfully, of course, these people are few and far between. They're out there right on the fringes. But there's a few out there. Like I said, you know, there's always those on the fringes who are going to believe this stuff. But I think that you're going to find that, you know, I think poll after poll has shown that, you know, something like 70% of the population of this country believes that, you know, a woman has the right to choose. And indeed she does, because Roe v. Wade is the law of the land, and it's not going anywhere. It's useful to invoke to whip up the base of the anti-abortion crowd, but that's really about all it's good for. And, you know, they support abortion rights. There's a loud minority that is against it in all cases. And then you have kind of the vast bulk of us who are in between. So yeah, I mean, I suppose you could say that, you know, any kind of reasonable take on this is going to be somewhere in the middle. The problem though is that you have an exceptionally wide middle here. And you're talking about probably, you know, of the people who think that, you know, the mother should die rather than have an abortion is probably in the single digits percentage. And I think you're going to find an equal percentage of people on the other side of the issue who are saying that you know, you should have as many abortions as possible. So both of which are completely unreasonable positions, and I think that the vast majority of us are somewhere in the middle. Now there's a continuity here. It's not obviously all extremes, but I think that the common opinions about things like the mother's health and rape and incest and things like that, it's a huge wide area of agreement on people who, you know, think that it's acceptable. Now, there's a lot of people who would say that those are the only exceptions that you can make. And then there's other, you know, other people who are more lenient in their opinions. Now, I think that those are acceptable reasons to have an abortion. If the mother is at risk, if the child is at risk, those are acceptable reasons for abortion. If the child has a horrible disease, and I've heard of these things too, but, you know, then I think that is an acceptable reason. I don't like it, but, you know, I don't like it for the same reason that I don't like people dying of cancer. You know, it's tragic. But it's not something that I'm going to base my political philosophy on. It, you know, it's, and I realize that, yeah, obviously abortion is a hot button issue. Like I said, I tend to be a pro-lifer, and as I've said on the show, I tend to be a pro-lifer all the way, which means that I don't like abortion, I don't like capital punishment, and I don't like war. I think that as a humanist, as a secular humanist particularly, I think that human life has value. And I don't think that we should squander it for ridiculous reasons. And for that reason, I come down on the abortion side as being against abortion. But at the same time, I'm not a social activist. I don't think that I have any business telling a woman whether or not she can have an abortion. If you don't like abortion, if you don't want people to have them, then don't have them. Yeah, I've seen statistics, and I don't know how accurate these are, but I've seen statistics that suggest that the most anti-abortion parts of the country are some of the areas that have the highest rate of abortions. Now, why might that be? And I think a lot of it is because, you know, they hold these positions for emotional reasons. And then when they find themselves in the circumstance, then they start thinking a little bit differently on the issue. They start maybe seeing some of the arguments that the pro-choice people have. And I think that certainly it's also the result of, you know, people with less education, people who maybe don't have the options that wealthier people have. And the topic actually kind of brings up a comment that I made on Michael Moss's show, Post-It Cast. And I, you know, we're having a discussion about this young woman who abandoned her baby by throwing it into a garbage dumpster. And this was, you know, why would somebody do such a thing? And I don't think that a single person involved in that show thought that that was somehow a good thing. You know, I think, you know, all of us were horrified by that. But I can kind of understand why people feel they have no choice. And I think in a lot of cases, people who do that sort of thing, you know, they do those things because they didn't have the option of an abortion open to them for whatever reason, whether somebody in their life was controlling them, didn't give them that option, didn't actually have that open to them as a viable choice. And so they choose to get rid of the kid once it's born. And, you know, these things are of course, horribly, horribly tragic. But they happen. They happen all the time, unfortunately. And they happen everywhere. Don't think any country, any state of the union, any city is immune to that. Okay, so let's move on to this third topic, and this being the topic of euthanasia. And you're talking about how when we have a pet that is old or sick and, you know, suffering, and we put them to sleep. It's a very nice thing, isn't it, to put them to sleep. But you're killing them, and there's no way really around that reality. We dress it up nice and make it sound like the humane thing to do. And, of course, in a lot of cases it is. Not in all cases, but in a lot of cases it is. Now, why don't we do that with people? Well, I guess the answer is that we do. But with people, you have a whole raft of other ethical issues involved, most of which involve the choice of the person who's dying. And, you know, there are laws against suicide, for example, and I think that's ridiculous. I think that really, you know, if somebody wants to kill themselves, if somebody wants to end their own life, that's their choice. Now, I may, as a friend or as a family member, I may try to talk them out of that. In fact, I probably would try to talk them out of that, but it kind of depends on their situation too. If they're in constant pain, if they're dying of terminal cancer, if they, you know, and they choose to end their own life, I don't have a whole lot to say about it. It's their life. And, you know, with a pet, or with a fetus for that matter, they don't really have that input. They don't have that choice. So, you know, we talk about, you know, euthanizing animals and, you know, between euthanizing people. I don't really see that as equivalent. I think euthanasia is something that you really have to look at in terms of the individual case, in terms of the individual person, what their expressed wishes are. I know a lot of people have living wills now that actually say, I don't want to be resuscitated. I don't want heroic actions taken to prolong my life. I don't want to be attached to life support machines. You know, I know people in my family who have that expressed wish. I have that expressed wish. I don't want to be a Terry Schiavo. If I'm that incapacitated, I say, let me die. Because I won't be aware of what's going on around me. Not even suffer. I mean, you know, because there's actually no indication that Terry Schiavo was actually suffering. But if I were in that kind of situation, would I want maintaining me beyond all hope that I would ever get better? Would I want that to be draining away the financial resources of my entire family? No, I wouldn't. It's not fair to them. You know, especially if it's a clear-cut situation where I'm never going to get better. And, you know, I have nothing against people wanting to take their own lives. I don't think suicide should be illegal. It's illegal in a lot of places, but I don't think it should be. I don't think that, Dr. Kevorkian was the monster that some people would paint him as. I don't think he's a great man, but he was actually providing a service that he was asked to provide, and he felt that he was ethically okay with that. And I agree. For the most part, I do. So they are complicated issues, but again, I say you're talking about torture, you're talking about euthanasia, you're talking about abortion, and kind of lumping them together. I don't agree that they're similar situations at all. And again, I take every situation, every ethical situation on its own merits. And indeed, every political stand I take on its own merits. And when you start talking about things like political bias, and we were talking about that a few shows ago, and I find that it's not that I have political biases. I think there's kind of a way of looking at things that kind of implies that there's only two sides to any issue, and I don't think that that's true. I think that there are multiple sides to any issue. There's very few issues that are as clear-cut as, say, torture. And the people who agree with me more on particular issues are people who I'm going to be more supportive of politically. And that's how I determine, you know, who I vote for. And it depends on the person, too. Anyway, I hope that that's been somewhat enlightening anyway. It's kind of a complicated set of ethical questions. But any feedback on this, of course, is certainly welcome. And people can email the show. The email address is tom@tomharrisusa.com. Okay, moving along, we go over to Facebook, and I have a note here from our good friend Leanne LG. Hello, Leanne. It's been a while since you've written to the show, so it's good to hear from you. And Leanne made a comment to one of my statuses there. She says, I've been thinking of things I need to tell you, like how nice it was to listen to the last show, touching on some of the very things I'd been thinking about earlier that day, torture and revenge. Well, Leanne, if you're thinking about torture and revenge, that's kind of scary. she says, and like how time travel would be tricky business for a woman. Yeah, it would be, wouldn't it? And actually, there was a comedian, I think it was Louis C.K., who actually did a bit on white privilege, and he was talking about, one of the good things about being white would be that you could time travel anywhere, you know, back to in time, and you'd be okay. And you find a lot of, you know, people who are, you know, African American, for example, wouldn't want to go back beyond, you know, the early 1960s, you know, because things were pretty bad for them then. And it's true. Yeah, and for women too. I mean, in a lot of places, women were considered property. In a lot of places, women still are considered property. So, yeah, I can imagine that would be a major issue. But that being said, Leanne, where would you go if you had a time machine? That's one of those questions that I think should always be open for people to answer. And with that, I'm running out of time. So thanks for listening. As always, you can email the show with any questions, comments, or whatever. You can write to tom@tomharrisusa.com. And don't forget that starting Saturday, April 24th at 10 a.m. Central Time, which is 11 a.m. Eastern Time and 4 p.m. in the UK, the live show is starting on unitedkingdomradio.co.uk. So everybody tune in and Skype in. Promises to be at least a little bit different from this show, because we'll have other people on there, hopefully. So anyway, thanks for listening. And from cold and rainy Chicago, this is Tom Harris signing off. We'll see you next time.